Good afternoon, everyone. We have a lot of ground to cover today, so I'd like to call the committee to order. And we do not have a quorum yet, but we are going to start today. As everybody probably knows, we're going to talk a lot today about our Minnesota Family Investment Program. Hopefully by the end of the committee today, all of you and all the people in the audience will know a whole lot about this program, which would be great, because I think Minnesotans in general don't really understand this program very well. But we are going to start with a brief overview of the Minnesota Family Investment Program, which we call MFIP. That's our MFIP, if you hear us say MFIP. Before we go to, this is how we're going to run the day, just to be efficient. We have several bills that all have different approaches to changing our MFIP program. So we're going to start out with a brief overview from the Department of Human Services, just to kind of remind everybody about kind of the basic facts of the program. Then we're going to take a number of testifiers who want to talk about this subject. It's a bit unusual. Usually we move a bill and then have testifiers on that bill. But because these bills are all related, we're going to ask all our testifiers to kind of come up and just talk about the things that they want to talk about, what they'd like to see happen with the program, their experiences, and so on. And then we will move each of the bills individually. The bills will all be laid over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. So that means we will not be voting on individual bills. If there are amendments, we, of course, would be voting on any amendments that are offered. And there are some amendments to some of these bills. So that's kind of our roadmap, members. And we still don't have a quorum. Okay, we're close to a quorum, so we may we have a quorum. So before we get started, excellent. You win the lottery today, Representative Munson. So with that, since we do have a quorum, I would like to entertain a motion to approve the minutes. They're in our packets. Representative Mann moves approval of the minutes of March 5th, 2019. The minutes are before us. Is there any discussion to the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Thank you. The minutes are approved.
I mean.
So with that, welcome to the committee. We'll go ahead and hear the presentation.
Madam Chair, thank you so much. My name is Claire Wilson. I'm the Deputy Commissioner at the Department of Human Services. And as the Chair described, she had asked that we just do a little bit of grounding again in the MFIP program and just a brief overview. And we are going to provide that and then let you dig into your bills. So just as a reminder, the Minnesota Family Investment Program, or MFIP, is Minnesota's only cash assistance program for families with children and pregnant women living in poverty. And MFIP came into being along with the passage of major welfare reform in the 90s, the Personal Responsibility and Work Opportunities Reconciliation Act, which the passage in 1997, the state legislature then created the MFIP program, and it was launched statewide in 1998. So just a quick reminder about who the program is serving, okay? So about 72% of the individuals served on the program are children. About 40% of those children are age 5 or younger. Of the adults on the program, women make up 81%. 62% of the MFIP caseload are people of color and American Indians, compared to 9% of the population. And this, of course, highlights for us the deep economic disparities that exist in Minnesota. There is, of course, a limit to how long you can, with some exceptions, to how long you can be on, a 16-month limit. And only 7% of the adults who turned to the program since 98 have reached that 5-year limit. 42% of all new applicants use MFIP for once for 12 months or less. So in 2018, MFIP served an average of about 31,000 families. That's about 91,000 people per month. And the monthly infant cash grant for a family of three is $532. So we also, our state has a waiver from the USDA to be able to deliver SNAP and MFIP together. And so I just want to just do two scenarios. I think these were in front of the committee earlier, but this just kind of helps remind you how this is applied basically on the ground and in real life. So the first scenario is Robin. Robin's a mother of two. She works 30 hours a week at a gas station. And she makes $9.42 an hour. A reminder that the poverty line for a family of three is just over $1,700 per month, so $1,732 per month. Working at the gas station, Robin's earned income is approximately $1,230 a month. So based on this income limit, with two children, she is eligible to receive $36 in MFIP, the $110 housing assistance grant, and $453 in SNAP. Okay. The next scenario is Sam. He is looking for work. He has two children.
Commissioner, could I just stop you for 1 second?
Of course.
Just to make sure members know. This
oh, yeah.
This is handed out after our packets. So, because I see members aren't necessarily looking at it, and I just want to make sure as you go through that we are actually seeing it. So.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, you have both these scenarios in your packet. So Sam's on the flip side of Robin, is searching for work and has two children. Just can't say it enough. The poverty line for a family of three is $1,732 per month. With no income, Sam receives $532 per month in MFIP cash, the $110 housing grant, and $532 in SNAP. Now, I think as you look at these numbers and you look at these scenarios and you think about what is available to these families who are primarily working, the Minnesota Family Investment Program grant just no longer provides a strong foundation for a family to achieve stability or well-being. This is one of the reasons why the governor does have a proposal in his budget to increase the cash assistance grant by $100. And I think it's really important to remember that the majority of parents applying from MFIP are coming from low-wage jobs. They're coming from retail, food service, temp agencies, health jobs, entry-level jobs. These are occupations with very high turnover, very low stability, and, you know, of course, ones where people are much likely to collect unemployment benefits. I also think it's critical to point out, and this is also in your packet around the housing, but, some infant families do receive that 110 housing assistance grant. Now, and I said this before when I was presenting the governor's budget, but I think it bears repeating over and over. You know, in 1986, the HUD fair market rent for a two-bedroom apartment in the Twin Cities was $480. Today, the fair market rate for an apartment is $1,151, the same apartment. The number of homeless families with children has grown almost fourfold since 1986. So it's just important, I think, to ground ourselves in both what the fair market for housing is, the fact that many of these families are working, and also that they are, you know, finding some ladders and some stability, but that this just is not a strong enough foundation in its current iteration. I would also just add that that the counties, the tribes, and the state have been working together on thinking about program simplification because these are very complex programs. And so that work has been underway to really try to create some greater predictability for Minnesotans and their families. So it's a brief kind of high-level overview, and if you all have any questions, the amazing Deb can respond to them.
Well, thank you, Deputy Commissioner Wilson. We really appreciate that. And we have returned to this topic a number of times. I do want to point out to members, too, that Ms. Pugnelli from House Research made a very helpful chart for us that is in our packets as well. I asked her, because we're considering various bills with different levels in them, to put it all on one page for us, and she has done that. So I just want to point that out, that this is in your packet as well, if you want to kind of look at what the various proposals are and what their impact might be. So thank you very much. Are you able to stay around, or do you have to run off somewhere? Either of you.
Madam Chair, Deb will stay around. That will be far more beneficial to the committee. Right. We've exhausted my wealth of information.
Oh, I doubt that very much. But thank you so much for your presentation and for giving us these, again, reminding us of these scenarios. I think it's really important that we have a real context for what we're doing here today. So we're going to move to testifiers now and move through this, talk more about the topic before we start moving the bills. So welcome to the committee, Ms. Webster.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jessica Webster. I'm a staff attorney with Legal Aid, and we stand in strong and excited support of an increase to MFIP cash assistance of at least $200 plus a COLA. But if the legislature can be more aggressive than that, it is welcome. Madam Chair and members, I want to first thank Representative Kunesh-Podein for carrying these bills this year. She's been thoughtful and amazing, and we appreciate it. And to all the members of this committee that have signed on to one or more of these bills, to bills that aren't here today, to bills of the past. Many of you have been champions in past years of an increase to MFIP cash assistance, and we're grateful for that. I'm going to defer to my friends and colleagues to talk more about this program and what it means to the children of Minnesota. So I wanted to take my 1 to 2 minutes to just talk about how can we pay for it? Because that's the question that I get from legislators when I step into an office. And I am one of the few Minnesota citizens that tracks the TANF fund diligently every year. And I have been looking at the consolidated fund statements, and the TANF fund is on usually page 93, 94 of those statements. It's released a few times a year. And I've been tracking TANF spending for over a decade. Beginning in 2016, DHS built some really extraordinary inflation into the human services line item for this program. I'm not suggesting malfeasance or any wrongdoing. I think forecasting is an art. But what that did, what those kind of inflated numbers did, were show that the TANF fund, the federal dollars that fund this program, would zero out in the tails. So beginning in 2015, 2016, it started to look really dire. Like we couldn't, any TANF that was on the bottom line was going to be spent in future years.
And Ms. Webster, I'm not sure everybody understands TANF. Could you just, you know, give us the plain English?
Yes, Madam Chair. Yeah. Madam Chair, TANF is Temporary Assistance to Needy Families. It's a federal block grant that comes to Minnesota. Staff can correct me, but I think it's about $280 million, our TANF block grant, that comes to Minnesota that has to be used for a few major purposes. It's for families with children. It's a somewhat restricted fund to families with children, but there's wide latitude on what you can use those funds for.
Thank you.
And so there has been underspending of that TANF block grant for several years. So beginning in 2015, we left $45 million on the bottom line unspent. 2016, we left $63 million. 2017, $60 million. 2018, last session, there was $56 million in federal TANF money left unspent on the bottom line. And the reasons for that are that we have been kind of projecting this growth and investment in MFIP that never materialized. And I think any of the people that are work on the ground in this program will tell you they know that caseloads are the lowest they've ever been. We've had falling caseloads. And even at the peak of the recession, even if we start thinking about what might happen in future years, 2 to 3% year over year, more families came to TANF. TANF is not, MFIP, sorry, is not as responsive to recessions as, say, SNAP. It's a very onerous and difficult program to participate in, and you don't see huge fluctuations of families coming to this program. So I'll just end by saying, what does $50 million in TANF mean? It means that we could have increased the grant $150 a month for families. That's $1,800 a year for a family. That's real money that families could have had in their budgets. And as little as $1,000 makes a real difference for kids. And so as you move forward and build your budget, the $50 million that's on the bottom line in the TANF reserve right now has been stable for 4 years, and I encourage you to look at those funds, and it could really mitigate the impact to the general fund if you do this increase. Or it could help you be more bold in terms of really catching the TANF, the MFIP cash grant up to catch up for inflation. So thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Ms. Webster. We appreciate it. The next testifier on the list is Toshika Washington from Duluth. Welcome to the committee, and just please say your name, and if you're with an organization or anything, just let us know, and then go ahead and give us your testimony.
Toshika Washington from Duluth Charm. Hello, my name is Toshika. I live in Duluth. I'm currently on NFIP as we speak. I'm a single mother of two boys. I'm a resident leader of the Steve O'Neill's apartments. I used to be homeless. I fell into a hard situation, domestic violence. I'm currently can't work at this moment. I have really bad seizures, and I'm trying to get that figured out now. My health is getting kind of worse, but if it wasn't for NFIP, me and my family would have nothing to stand on. The last 2 years of not having my own place, I got a place now with the Steve O'Neill to help me with paperwork. While I was homeless, I did not have an address. I was unable to access NFIP, and I was unsure of who I was supposed to turn to for help. I have now been on NFIP for 6 months. I have a peace of mind. I have not missed one payment of rent, which is at the Steve O'Neill's. I can buy hygiene supplies, Dollar Tree for my boys. They love Dollar Tree. Okay. Some of my shortfalls from the NFIP affect my children and myself. I have a 16-year-old. He's in a size 12 shoe. And with the money that I get for NFIP, it's just not enough. You know, being a single mother with two boys, he's 16 years old, he's 200 pounds. So once I pay my rent and I have to get him a pair of shoes, I can't afford anything else for my other son. So I think with the increase would be very, very helpful to single mothers like me and everybody else, because it's just really hard. It's really hard. I struggle with, like, haircuts for the kids. I can't afford field trips. I can't afford anything. I just can't. I currently receive $613 a month. I pay $200 worth of rent. I think we should try to increase the NFIP for $200 a month. It will be very helpful for rent. Like, I'm in subsidized housing now, but if I was not living in subsidized housing, how would I be able to pay my bills? And that's really hard. And clothes for both of the boys. There are places that we can go to, far as the Damiano or the Charm in Duluth, Minnesota, that can help us out. But it's really hard with a 16-year-old to find clothing and shoes that fit a boy his size. You know, it's just been really hard. But some of the big things that weigh on me daily is when I don't have enough money for the boys to be included in what the field trips, the Wi-Fi. When you're in high school, you need Wi-Fi because everything is done on the computer. Oh, it's a lot. The field trips and the sacrifices for the kids, sometimes I have to sell, like, a TV or something, or I sold one of the kids' bikes last month just to make sure that my 16-year-old can go on his school dance. Yes. I think that we really should have an increase because it's really hard for single mothers. It's just really, really hard for me, really hard. And thank you from the bottom of my heart for listening to my story. Please help and support us with $200 increase in the NFIP program. And more than 55,000 Minnesota kids is extremely living in poverty as we speak. So please help us. Have a good day.
Thank you very much, Ms. Washington. Thank you for making it all the way down from Duluth. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Senta Leff.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Members of the committee, my name is Senta Leff. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless, and we represent about 150 member organizations from every legislative district in the state. In addition to that, I was once a little girl whose mom accessed MFIP. This was me around the time, the last time that MFIP received a cash increase back in 1986. I know I have a short amount of time, so what I want you to remember as you consider this bill moving forward is that MFIP is a de facto unemployment insurance program. You've already heard the vast majority of people who access MFIP do so immediately after losing a low-wage job. The unemployment insurance program has kept up with the cost of inflation. MFIP clearly has not. If we were making a request to you that represented the cost of inflation, we'd be asking for an increase of well over $1,000 a month. The connection to affordable housing, MFIP is the most commonly accessed public program among homeless families, and family homelessness has quadrupled since shortly after the program became stagnant. We have bipartisan support for this bill, for which we're incredibly grateful. We know that this makes common sense because families living in 2019 simply cannot survive, let alone thrive, on $1,986. So thank you for your support.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony. Ann Krisnick. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Ann Krisnick. I'm the Executive Director of the Joint Religious Legislative Coalition, which is made up of the Minnesota Council of Churches, the Minnesota Catholic Conference, the Jewish Community Relations Council, and the Islamic Center of Minnesota. We have members of faith across the state working on justice and kindness, I would say, almost issues. We're here in support of any bills that raise the MFIP grant, and I just wanted to talk a little bit about what we see in our faith communities. People come to churches and synagogues and mosques for all kinds of reasons. Sometimes it's food, sometimes it's diapers, sometimes it's medicine. It's often basic cash assistance for the most basic of needs. And our faith communities operate food shelves, and they have diaper drives, and they host medical clinics, and they provide assistance, but that's not nearly enough. All of our faith traditions teach that we must care for every member of our community, and that's especially true for the poor and vulnerable. And you could go to most any of our congregations, and at some point you'd hear them quote Deuteronomy, which says, "Open your hand to the poor and needy in your land." As Santa Leff just testified, for many people on MFIP, this is their unemployment. They're working low-wage workers or low-wage positions, part-time. They don't qualify for unemployment, and so they're ineligible, but they may participate in MFIP. And the program's working. The average length of time that someone is on MFIP is less than a year. We all want Minnesotans to move into economic stability, and this is a program that does that. You've heard that 7 out of 10 recipients are children, that 40% of those children are under 5. We know that 80% of brain development happens in the first 3 years of a child's life. Our faith communities know that every one of those children is created in the image and likeness of God. And in order to protect their dignity, we need to make sure that they are adequately sheltered and clothed and fed. The call to love our neighbor and care for our neighbor surely requires that we help these families. We urge you to increase the tax grant, the cash grant, and thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you very much, Ms. Krisnick. We appreciate your testimony. Doug Mitchell? Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Madam Chair and members, thank you for this opportunity to speak in favor of House File 799. I'm Reverend Doug Mitchell. I serve on the board of the Joint Religious Legislative Coalition. For 16 years, I was an associate pastor at Westminster Presbyterian Church in downtown Minneapolis, and I was the primary pastor working with the stream of people who came through our doors seeking assistance. We also participated in Downtown Congregations to End Homelessness, which is a coalition of Protestant, Catholic, Jewish, and Muslim congregations. They run an assistance program for emergency rental, but no amount of charity from religious institutions can make up for the shortfall in what is needed by our neighbors. Many of our neighbors are on MFIP and struggle to stretch those payments through the month. They ask for rent more than any other single thing, but there are also medical copays, transportation, telephone, utilities. There's other things that are often mentioned with the request for financial assistance. As I talked with them, I found out that basic personal items are often the last thing on their list that they never get to. Diapers for their children, soap, shampoo, over-the-counter medications. It's really easy to spend $80 to $85 a month on diapers, which is 15% of the maximum $532 grant. A woman who I will call Alicia has two children, one still in diapers. She struggles with every month. She is diabetic, and the thing she most often does without is her full medication, which of course makes her illness even worse. The insurance she has requires high copays for every prescription. She hates the feeling that she's forced to beg in order to meet the basic needs of her family, but virtually every month she's forced to go somewhere, usually a house of worship, to ask for assistance. The extra $50 a month, building to $200 a month, would be a tremendous help, and the 2% increase would guarantee that we don't go another 30-plus years without raising the amount. The writer of Proverbs tells us, those who oppress the poor insult their maker, but those who are kind to the needy honor God. I urge us all to honor rather than insult our Creator. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Stephanie Hoganson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. My name is Stephanie Hoganson. I'm the Outreach Director at Children's Defense Fund Minnesota. CDF advocates for Minnesota children and families with a focus on the needs of children of color, American Indian children, and our lowest income children who face a steeper ladder to success. Thank you to the bill authors and to the entire committee for dedicating a hearing to increasing the MFIP cash grant. As you've already heard, an overwhelming majority of the people accessing this program are children. And to kind of add to the statistics that already have been out there, 1 in 10 of the people accessing the program are an infant under 12 months. As this committee knows, poverty, especially in early childhood, is correlated with poor child and adult outcomes, resulting in additional long-term costs to the state. Research shows as little as an additional $1,000 of average annual income in a family's budget would result in higher reading and math scores for children in low-income families. After 33 years without an increase, Children's Defense Fund Minnesota has long worked for as significant as possible of an increase to the MFIP cash grant, and we hope that will happen this legislative session. We also add that an annual cost of living increase is necessary to prevent continued erosion of its value and recognize the increased costs of raising children. I think Toshika did a great job emphasizing what budgeting on $532 a month looks like, but we have a tool called the Economic Stability Indicator Tool that analyzes budgets of families in Minnesota that's used by state agencies and counties to help analyze policy and guide clients toward economic stability. An example this tool demonstrates is after a job loss, a family of three entering MFIP in Olmsted County would be more than $1,000 in the hole each month when trying to meet a very bare-bones basic needs budget. This budget includes most other work support programs accessible to the family, but does not include typical family expenses such as cell phones, utilities besides electric, Wi-Fi, as Tashika mentioned, debt payments, and transportation beyond to school and work. Every dollar invested in MFIP will flow right back into our state's local economies when it's spent on diapers, electric bills, and other basic needs for children. Significant investment will not only improve economic stability for families, but research shows could also reduce the high cost of remedial services, such as special education and health care, due to the improvement of child outcomes. Investment in the 62,000 Minnesota children accessing MFIP will pay off now and in the future. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Hogenson. We appreciate your testimony. Normally, we take the bills and then we ask whether there's anyone else in the audience who wants to testify on the bills. But is there anyone else in the audience right now who feels that they want to come and discuss the subject, please? Welcome to the committee. If you would just tell us your name and where you're from, and go ahead.
Yeah, my name is Tom Sampson, and I'm from Pax Christi Catholic Community in Eden Prairie, part of the Justice Ministry at Pax Christi. And a couple of years ago, the JRLC proposed a $100 a month increase in MFIB. And I sat down. I'm a numbers person. And so I sat down and figured out how much that would cost the average taxpayer. And that came out to about the same price as a movie ticket. Not very much. And then I compared it to the amount of money the taxpayers have spent on football stadiums in the last, the Gopher Stadium, the Viking Stadium. And I came to the conclusion that we have our priorities mixed up in the state. So let's put the priorities where they belong and take care of our neighbors. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sampson. And the page will give you a sign-in sheet, if you would give us, so that we can get your contact information before you leave. Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, committee members, I'm Sue Watlow Phillips. I'm the Executive Director of MICA, the Metropolitan Interfaith Council on Affordable Housing, as well as Vice President of the National Coalition for the Homeless. I want to thank the incredible work for Welfare Rights has done for years and years on trying to help us increase the resources for the MFIP program. Back in 1986, we actually fought a 30% cut to this grant. That was happening when I was president of the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless. So MICA is very strongly supportive of a significant increase, and we would we support doubling it. So we would support House File 309 and encourage you to get this program back in shape so that we are actually providing for the basic needs of our folks as they're on the program. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And also, if you would let the page get your information, that would be very helpful. All right. Seeing no other, do we have another, someone who'd like to say something? Are you coming down to speak?
Yes.
Okay, please. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Marty Roars. Thank you, Madam Chair, and the committee for hearing my testimony. I work for the Sisters of St. Joseph of Carondelet. Many of you may know the sisters and their work for social justice and the work for the poor in the community. I just ask you, I think it's a no-nonsense bill. We need to increase this. It's been over 30 years. I think we know that this helps families and people in need. The sisters see these individuals in our community, in their clinics, in their shelters, in their programs every day, and this would be a great increase, so thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Okay, I think we can move to the bills. So we're going to change the order just a bit. We're going to start with House File 799, Representative Kunesh-Podein, and then Representative Hausman has a bill, and she needs to go. So we're going to put her up second, if that's okay. So the second bill that we will hear will be House File 1272. So Representative Kunesh-Podein, welcome to the committee, and Representative Kunesh-Podein will move House File 799 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I've invited my partner here, Representative Noor, to share this spot with me. He's very passionately committed to this legislation, and I asked if he would join me here. I myself am very very proud to carry this legislation, mostly for a lot of different reasons, but back in 1986, Minnesota was really good to me and provided the assistance that I needed at a very tough time in my life. And I received this kind of assistance not once but twice in my lifetime. And had it not been for the resources that Minnesota has put out there for our families and our communities, I probably would not be sitting here today. I would not have been able to keep my house. I wouldn't have been able to support my children. I wouldn't have been able to continue on with my education. And for those reasons and many, many more, I'm very, very proud to carry this legislation. It's almost unfathomable to me that back in 1986 when I was receiving these levels of assistance and barely getting by, that we have that expectation today that this is something that will actually help or move folks out of poverty or out of really strong hardship. And so, members, I would like to turn it over to a representative here, and he's going to explain the bill a little bit, and then we ask for your support.
Representative Neuer, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is House File 799, which we're considering increasing the MFIP transitional standard. And quite frankly, you've heard about from every testimony that for over 30 years, nothing has changed. To give you a little bit of my background, I've worked for Hennepin County as a financial assistant person. That was way back in 2000, and a couple of years I have issued MFIP benefits. This is not about helping those poor who are, you know, not doing much work. The individuals who have got hardships, the individuals who are looking for support at that point in their life. So when we issue benefits, you will hear their stories. You will see what they're going through. And for us to consider the amount that we're giving, and when somebody is not living in subsidized housing, the rental in my just neighborhood for three-bedroom, it's going to cost you more than $2,000. Can you tell me where they can find a housing? See, this process is also creating multiple issues, so we need to consider the individuals who we're providing support. This is an investment to help individuals reach self-sufficiency. This will help them find the employment they're looking for. Instead of looking for multiple jobs just to get by, they will be able to utilize the resource they're getting to help their families to have stable lives so they can consider themselves getting good education, good jobs, and focus on the future of their kids. This proposal addresses the increase of MFIP by $50. I think the language has changed based on the request from DHS. On the other hand, I've worked with most of the folks at the DHS addressing the system needs. Bringing a change takes some time, and we want to get it right. And to make sure that we get it right, we have to work with DHS to make sure that we address the timeliness. The first portion is to increase by $50 by March 2020 per request from DHS. That is the first initial stage. And then the second level is to increase by $50 by October 1, 2020. So within a year, because the COLA, the cost of living adjustment that is done by DHS, will allow them to do multiple work. Just to give you an example, there will be lots of work that will need to be done. So we need to be more careful which kind of work we give to the department because we want them to do the right job. And then by 2021, increase by another $50, and then 2022, we will increase it by another $50. In total, that is $200 that we're proposing in this bill. Madam Chair and members, I think the question comes to, do we use the TANF block grant or do we use the general funds? I think that's a big question for us to answer. We've heard from other testifiers saying that we're spending $90 million out of the $260, if I'm correct, about $265, from the TANF block grant versus almost another $90 from the state general fund. So the question to us is, where do we get that money from? And I think we have to be more careful as we decide moving forward. And be able to serve the families that who need help. So with that, we'll turn it back to my colleague.
Thank you very much, Representative Noor. And, of course, you've just described the amendment, which we haven't adopted yet. So thank you for the reminder. And so, Representative Kunesh-Podein, I assume you want to move the A1 amendment.
Yes, Madam Chair, I would like to move the A1 amendment for House File 799. And this amendment, if you look at the original bill, we had the dates of July 1st as it began, and then again that COLA in January 1st, 2023. And on the amendment, we had to make some date adjustments to help because we had contacted or we've been contacted by Minute, and in order for them to make the kind of changes they needed in the system and to ensure that it would be a smooth transition, they felt that they needed a little bit more time to do that, and so we have adjusted the dates to the ones that they have suggested.
All right. Are there any questions to the amendment? All right, seeing none, all those in favor of the adoption of the A1, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. All right. Is there, so we've pretty much discussed the bill with the amendment. Do you have any closing comments, Representative Kunesh-Podein or Representative Noor, before we lay this bill over?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like to ask for the support of all of our legislators here to ensure that, as Representative Noor said, that we're not just helping folks get by, but that we're helping them get ahead. And we would appreciate your support on this bill.
Thank you very much to both of you. And so House File 799, as amended, is laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you. So we will take up now House File 1272. Representative Hausman, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
So, Representative Hausman, if you would just go ahead and maybe, I don't know if you were here when we, you have a delete all, you have an amendment as well.
Madam Chair, it deletes the findings, which I think weren't necessary for the bill.
Okay, so the chair will move House File 1272 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus, and I will move the A1 amendment, which, as Representative Hausman just described, deletes Section 1 of the bill.
I'm sorry, were you going to vote on that?
Go ahead, Representative Hausman.
The department also had an issue with the effective date, when you eventually get to shaping your bill, I'm sure those issues will be worked out.
Okay, well, let's first adopt the A1. Is there any discussion to the A1? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. And then, Representative Hausman, we don't have a 24-hour rule in this committee, and if you wanted to incorporate a change in the effective date, we could certainly do that if you know what you'd like.
That was the department's request, and frankly, I don't have the specifics from them, so they may want to get that.
Okay. All right. Thank you. So I don't know if you're in the room, Representative Hausman, when I pointed out that we have House Research has given us a nice chart of table, I should say, of the different bills that we have here. But would you like to just describe your bill and maybe how it's different from the others we're hearing today?
And Madam Chair, what I'll do is give the context in which this is coming forward as part of the package. This, believe it or not, marks the 10th anniversary of the Legislative Commission on Ending Poverty by 2020. We had a press conference last week. Senator Marty, Representative Mariani were part of that effort. And this is a sort of a staggering thought. We are marking the 10th anniversary of the Legislative Commission on Ending Poverty by 2020. And as we look back, how little we have done, and Madam Chair, I would suggest that's probably motivation for your committee to do as much as you are able on this. The four parts of that package that mark that 10th anniversary are the minimum wage, doubling the working family tax credit, the Child Care Assistance Program, and this MFIP $300 increase. So they were part of a package as we observed that event. I'm sure all of your background that you've received already points out that that 1986 figure, if you factored in inflation by now, even the 300 is probably less than that. And so we are not doing great things here, but ultimately are affected by the target you will get. And so I just bring this here as part of the context in marking that moment that we declared ending poverty by 2020, and yet how far we have to go.
All right. Representative Hausman, thank you for that. Any questions or discussion from the committee? All right. Not seeing any. Thank you, Representative Hausman. So House File 1272, as amended, is laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you. Okay. We will go back to Representative Kunesh-Podein and take up House File 309. And so Representative Kunesh-Podein is going to move House File 309 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Noor, welcome back as well. And why don't we just start by moving the A1 amendment, the author's amendment, and get the bill in the shape in which you'd like to discuss it. And so I assume, Representative Kunesh-Podein, you wanted to move the A1?
Madam Chair, yes, please. I would like to move the A1. It makes some technical changes in the verbiage and also, again, correct some of those dates that will allow a minute to create a smooth transition.
Okay. Any discussion to the amendment? Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I won't object to the amendment, but I do think we need to get a fuller written response from DHS on why just adding a dollar amount to a grant amount requires a year's delay for programming. We just need to have a better understanding of why people have to wait one more year for the computers.
Okay, thank you, Representative Loeffler. And maybe I hope, I think the DHS staff is still here, and maybe we can get that response before the end of at the end of the hearing, not now. But and of course, these bills are being laid over, and so we can make adjustments. We can still make adjustments. So, any other discussion to the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. So go ahead, please, Representative Kunesh-Podein and Representative Noor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And once again, I think I will pass it over to Representative Noor to explain this.
Representative Noor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a bill that actually addresses the TANF block grant, but it also goes to address the need to increase the cash grants, which includes general assistance. And that amount is a quote, I don't know, it was not included in the handout, so trying to find the amount.
200.
It's currently 203, so we're going to be increasing to... Madam Chair, if one of the House research can address the numbers changing for general assistance.
Okay. Ms. Brunelli.
Madam Chair and Representative Noor, in House File 309, the GA changes are on page 2, lines 31 and 32. So for a household of one, it would go from $203 a month to $457 a month, for example.
Okay. And Representative Noor, since we didn't have an overview on the GA, I don't know if you are able to do this, or maybe we should ask Ms. Pugnelli, just give us a really brief thumbnail of what GA is, just to remind people of how this is different. Should we ask Ms. Pugnelli, could you do that for us?
Thanks. Sure, Madam Chair and members. The General Assistance Program is a cash assistance program for individuals and married couples that don't have children, so they're not eligible for the MFIP program or TANF cash assistance.
Okay, and Ms. Pugnelli, this is state dollars, am I correct?
Yes, Madam Chair, it's state general fund money.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead, Representative Noor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to point out, this bill will require us to using the CPU. That is the consumer price index for all urban consumers, rather than just a specific amount, as noted. So this bill will include all the cash programs, particularly GA and MFIP standards.
Okay. Any questions from the committee? Any discussion? Okay. Not seeing any. Representative Grunhagen.
I actually have a question for the department after these presentations, okay?
Yes, thank you, Representative Grunhagen. We'll note that, and we are going to have the department come back after these presentations, and it looks like we will have time as well, so that's really great.
I do have a
question. All right, Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And page 1, line 1.17, it talks about an increase for inflation-based. My question is, do we have other programs that are tied to inflation where there's automatic increases?
Let's see, maybe Berg, can you answer that?
Madam Chair, generally no in the state budget. The forecast for medical assistance does include an inflationary factor for health care price trend. But then we, of course, correct the actual down the road. So this would actually put inflation into the grant and drive the expenditure. So I'm not aware of any place where we actually directly inflate the benefit, but I could be wrong. I'm not aware of any.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Bergen. I can kind of answer that a little bit, Representative Hamilton. It's not exactly the same thing as Mr. Berg says. However, if you think about the Disability Waiver Rate System, DWRS, and there's a formula that's the basis of the rates, which really includes inflation, and the way things are being worked on now, it's going to include updating it more often. And the rates themselves are based on average wages. That's kind of got an inflation kind of built in. Another place I could tell you that we really do it, and again, in kind of a different way, is with the legislation passed a few years ago for nursing homes. We have a cost-based system, and that means that as their costs grow, they report the costs, and it gets baked into the rates. So it's really not, it's maybe unusual to do it in a really clear and obvious way, I would say, what this is, but we do definitely bake in inflation into what we pay in HHS in a number of places.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Other discussion? All right. Thank you very much. So Representative Kunesh-Podein will renew her motion that House File 309, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And then Representative Kunesh-Podein is going to stay there because we're going to have now an informational hearing on House File 522.
Yes.
And members, the reason we're doing that is because we don't actually have the bill. It is in policy, I believe. But we thought that because we're taking up the topic today, that it would be a good day to talk about this bill as well, because it will be coming to us, and assuming it passes policy, of course, but it's thematically related, and so we thought it would be important to have the discussion at the same time. And so Representative Kunesh-Podein, we can't move the bill because we don't actually have it, even though it's in our hand the same way the other ones are, but formally speaking, we don't have the bill. So please go ahead and discuss House File 522.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. So House File 552 removes the requirements that MFIP participants be in compliance during the 60th month of assistance in order to be eligible for a hardship extension. The bill also removes the requirements that employed MFIP participants be in compliance for at least 10 out of the previous 12 months when they hit the time limit in order to be eligible for hardships and extensions. Furthermore, the bill removes languages under which MFIP extension recipients are currently subjected to the policies that apply to participants during the first 60 months of the program. And then it also modifies a list of MFIP sanctions. And I would like to then turn it over to the expert to explain some of those things.
All right. Ms. Webster, welcome back.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. The context for this bill, I'm sorry, I'm Jessica Webster. I'm a staff attorney with Legal Aid, and I've also been a member of two working groups over the last 3 to 4 years that have been looking at sanction reform within this program. And I'm sorry I did not get this out ahead of time, but I do think it's important to see who the members of this
Here's the page. Okay. Thank you.
The members of this working group were, because it did have broad-based county, provider, DHS, advocate involvement, and they were sometimes difficult meetings. I don't think this bill goes nearly as far as advocates would like. I think it might be a little bit of a push for some counties, but we felt like this represented good compromise in the program. So to give you a little bit of context, the Minnesota Family Investment Program is a really fantastic program in terms of it's a lifeline, fantastic in the way that it's a lifeline to some families, albeit very underfunded. The dark side of MFIP are sanctions. What sanctions mean are that when families and parents make a mistake in this program, make a mistake on paperwork, make a mistake on missing a meeting or an orientation, miss some hours in an employment plan, there are very significant penalties and consequences for making those mistakes. Federal law requires Minnesota to have sanctions, to have consequences for these mistakes. So we can't fully get rid of sanctions. However, how we build our sanction system and how we build our penalties, Minnesota has a lot more latitude on. And Minnesota has adopted a very onerous, burdensome, and deep penalty for making these mistakes. I would argue that I don't think the architects of welfare reform and the architects of the Personal Responsibility Work Opportunity Act contemplated that any state would not increase its grant since 1986 and then would possibly penalize parents $200 to $300 a month for not submitting paperwork requirement in a month. Minnesota is might be the only state that has monthly household reporting, and so there is a tremendous amount of paper coming at families, a tremendous amount of paper that has to be returned to the counties. Many states have modernized their systems. We have not. We're still paper-based. And so there are what this working group was charged with doing is making sure that pretty much two things. One, a paperwork mistake should never lead to eviction and homelessness. And two, sanctions should be simple, easy to understand, and easy to correct. And as much as I'm an advocate for families, I have developed an extraordinary sympathy and empathy for counties that are charged with doing these policies and these practices and working through these sanction policies. They're very complicated. You can just look at this bill and read through it and see how complicated sanction practices are. And there are errors. There are a lot of errors that get made. And so to give you a couple of examples that Legal Aid has dealt with recently, moms being sanctioned for missing hours after they've had a baby. DHS has gone back and corrected some of those errors. People who have been sanctioned who are homeless and have missed paperwork notices and have missed paperwork requirements and then face a $200 to $300 cut in a very small grant. So these can be devastating consequences for family, and in total, DHS estimates that we're withholding $9 million. We're taking back $9 million from low-income families who make these mistakes. And that is, in the context of a program that hasn't increased since 1986, it can be devastating for families. So I can I will turn it back to Representative Noor and Representative Kunesh-Podein. I'm just here as a working group member, and I'm happy to talk about some of the specifics of this bill and the mechanics and what it does, if that's helpful.
All right. Thank you very much, Ms. Webster. And there's a question. Should we take a question now on this topic, right?
Yes,
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Webster, thank you for that. This is, we're kind of finally diving into MFIP and the funding stuff, and you were talking about the paperwork. Can you tell me, is this month, after the initial setup is all going, is this a monthly 2-3 pages? Is it a one-pager? Give me an idea of actually how much, and just maybe a high overview of the, just what kind of information quickly are we asking for?
Ms. Webster.
Madam Chair, Representative Baker, so families each month have to report on a monthly household report form, and DHS can now probably tell me how long that report form is, 6 pages, and you have to fill out weekly, daily, weekly, monthly job logs about your activities. So everyone in this program is either working, looking for work, or participating in activities that have been approved by your counselor. So there's logs, there's paperwork to get approvals for your childcare hours. There is paperwork that you have to submit if you've done something that constitutes a mistake in this program. You might be asking for a good cause exception, so you might need to get statements, doctor statements, employer statements to support your mistake or support why you've missed paperwork. So it can be. It can be dozens of pages in a month for a family or more, and it's not electronic yet.
Thank you.
Representative Baker.
Thank you. That's it.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Webster. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, thanks for your comments on this. One of the comments you made was that the time limit a family can be on this MFIP, and then they can apply for hardship and renewal. How does that work? Is there a limit to the number of times, or is it pretty much up to the discretion of the county workers? If you could elaborate on that a little bit.
Representative Neuer?
Yeah. Madam Chair, members, there's a time limit for the MFIP that you're going to be receiving. It's only 16 months. You can either get consecutive or it can be different times. So that means it's 60 months. It's 5 years time limit.
Okay.
So if you came from another state and you've already used some of your months and you come here, you're not going to get that additional time. It's based on the federal level. And quite frankly, if you have got hardship, let's say you're working and you're only working 30 hours or 25 hours, which is not you cannot get enough income to get by, you will get that extension. Or if you have got a sick or incapacitated individual family member you're taking care of, you will get that extension. If you have got some other disabilities that limit your ability to work, you will get the extension for MFIP. So those are criteria that are listed in the statute, which we do have. And so just to elaborate, if you did not come into compliance based on this bill, we're trying to address it. You have to be in compliance at least 10 months of the 12 months prior to that in order to get the extension. And if you do have some hardships, that you are not able to take care of those hardships while you are getting MFIP, it will impact you. You're not going to get the extension that you should have received.
And Ms. Webster, did you want to add anything to that? Okay. Representative Grunhagen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, just a follow-up. You know, a few years ago, we had when I first got elected, there was an issue with the EBT card, okay, that there wasn't any identification, and they were being used in all 50 states and the Virgin Islands. But we passed a bill to try to address that. I think, and I'm going from memory, I think it reduced the EBT card use to 5-state area, and it also put identification on. Is that correct?
Ms. Webster, I think you might have been here, I think.
Madam Chair, Representative Grunhagen, yes. So in Minnesota, our EBT for our Minnesota Family Investment Program is limited to Minnesota and the border states.
Okay. And
Representative Grunhagen.
And there is identification on there?
Ms. Webster.
Madam Chair, Representative Grunhagen, no. We do not require a photo on the card.
Okay. Other questions? All right. All right, seeing none, thank you very much. And we will, of course, revisit this when we actually hear the bill. And we do appreciate your coming and giving us information on House File 522. So with that, members, we're going to ask, I think we have someone here from Minute who I think can address some questions from Representative Loeffler. But also, I think we were going to have Mr. Burke. Was Mr. Burke going to first? You have in your packets a spreadsheet from the TANF fund. And, we were going to have Mr. Burke just explain that to us a little bit before we go to the testifier. Mr. Burke.
Madam Chair, members, you should have in your packet a one-page sideways statement. It says Federal TANF Reserve Fund at the top. This is the for the February forecast, the statement of the TANF Reserve Fund. And I'll just orient members a little bit to, like many of our fund balance statements, the top of it deals with the revenues and resources part, and the from about a third of the way down to the bottom deals with the expenditures and then the budgetary balance, and you'll see the fiscal years across the top. Just to slightly correct something that had been mentioned earlier, if you go down just about five, six lines, you'll see one labeled TANF block grant base, and you look across, it's fairly stable. Our TANF block grant is actually $260 million a year, and it's been pretty stable at that for some time and projected out into the future at $260. Like most fund balances, this brings in the prior year's leftover balance. The budgetary balance goes to the top of the next line, and any adjustments, the new block grant, you've got a total resources available in any year there. Going down to the stuff that's of more interest to members, the actual and estimated uses, DHS gets a small piece for their central office operations, about $100,000 a year of it goes for the operations, and then a larger amount goes to DHS's administration at Children and Families, which actually runs the MFIP program. The primary one that goes up and down in forecasts is the next one, Budget Activity 21, which is the actual MFIP DWP pass-through and recoveries line. This is where the cash grant and DWP funding occurs, and that line is the one that really varies forecast to forecast and year to year. Number 41, Budget Activity 41, is the support services grants. It's a fairly large chunk. The largest, I believe this is where the housing item that has been mentioned a number of times, the additional $110 housing grant, falls into the support services grant line. That was actually Representative Loeffler's legislation a number of years ago that took a number. There are a number of allowed activities that counties have in support services grants, and it kind of corralled a fairly sizable chunk of the money to use for the housing grant portion. There are still some other allowable uses in there, emergency aid and emergency food aid and housing aid. There's a list, I believe, in statute, but the largest chunk is the housing piece. There's a very small portion that goes to the children's services grants. That's a grant line that deals with children's welfare protection, that is child welfare protection activities. And then there's an administrative reimbursement pass-through, which I believe is mostly goes to the counties. The health department gets, there was an oddity in 2017, but the number you see for all the other years, $11.7 million, the health department has gotten that amount of money for many years. It funds two things, primarily nurse home visiting, and then there is a piece that goes to the family planning special projects item, and that's been stable for many years. And then if you go to the bottom, transfers to other funds is the first item, federal Title 20, goes to the federal fund. That is the federal social services block grant, county social services block grant. The next line down is the portion of TANF that goes to the child care program, which goes into the Child Care Development Fund along with federal child care development dollars, and then also state funding pays for child care programs. And then a piece that doesn't get spent in this committee's jurisdiction, which is the about $25 million a year out of TANF that gets spent for the working family tax credit in the tax committee. Then you'll see the total uses in the budgetary balance. And just commenting briefly on the issue of the balance, you'll see if you look from fiscal 2020 to the end of the forecast horizon 2023, you see it assumes the balance goes down to, in this case, $3 million. If you looked in on the November forecast for this, it would have had a zero at the end. There's an assumption that the money gets spent over a forecast horizon. So this is a little bit of what Ms. Webster was getting at, is the assumption of how much federal fund spending there is always assumes that we'll spend all the federal money over the forecast horizon. Now, it's a partnership in MFIP-DWP, like many of our federal things. When we spend a certain amount of money, there's federal funding, and then the state pays the difference. Now, a lot of people in this committee tend to think of the partnership more like medical assistance, where if we spend a dollar on a qualified purpose, the feds reimburse us half of that cost. You got to think about it differently here. We get a fixed amount of money in TANF, and when we set the expenditure number, whatever comes out of the federal funding can come out of that, and the difference is what the state pays. Now, if you look at, as Ms. Webster pointed out, there has gradually over time built up a balance on the bottom line of this, but there's still an assumption that it will be spent. Now, that assumption could be questioned, and it could be more aggressively spent on the federal side, but ultimately, if this is a forecast like anything else, if they were a little more aggressive in the first years and then they're off at the end of the line, then the state general fund picks up the difference. It might be possible, there might be ways to force that $50 million in up front. From a fund balance perspective, then, you'd have to assume that there would be less money available to pay the federal share of the MFIP side, and the general fund side would automatically pay the difference. So that's why I don't think in the case of the cash grant it's necessarily helpful to think that we should up it by this dollar amount because there's money on the TANF balance. If we up it, it will cost a certain amount, which the state general fund will pay the difference from whatever TANF has. Now, it is true that over time the TANF fund has not spent all of its money. But again, there's, as with the state general fund forecast, there is an assumption that goes in there of here's how much it would have to spend in order to spend all the money. Okay. And the fact that we have spent less over time is, that's a forecasting issue.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Berg. Okay, so welcome to the committee. If you could just please tell us who you are.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Deb Tibstra. I am the Director of Application Services for Minute Services, partnering with DHS. Question.
Yes, and so Representative Loeffler had a question. I think we all kind of have a question here that we've done some amending of these bills in order to accommodate some system change, and I think we need an explanation of. Yeah, Representative Loeffler, why don't you go ahead and restate?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Ms. Tistra. The concept was one of the bills increases the grant by $50. Seems like a simple, easy number to put into a program and have it come through, and yet the authors were asked by DHS to delay it for a full year in order to allow for the computers to be reprogrammed. And I would like to have a better understanding of why it would take a full year to make that simple a change in a grant standard.
And Ms. I'm sorry, tell me your name again.
Tibstra. Madam Chair.
Please go ahead.
Representative, that is an excellent question. I'm happy to address that. The three bills that we were asked to estimate, the minute estimate is actually ranges from 5 to 10 months, depending on which of the three bills it is. So I'll walk you through the changes that we're going to make and then see if you have any questions. Certainly the table change itself, the changing of the grant of the cash portion of the grant to $50 is one change that we have to do. But the bulk of the changes that we are actually doing is to go out and identify and to apply the changes in a consistent manner. So the table change is just one change. The rest of the changes are what we call a mass change so that we go out for all of the MFIP clients and find them all at the same time and apply that change consistently and timely so that no one is getting the increased benefit earlier than the others. It's that change, those creating that program to go and identify and recalculate, redetermine the benefits, approve that, do the notice changes, is the bulk of that estimate. Additionally, this is the first time, as many people have testified, in 30 years that we've changed that any kind of a cash grant here. And the tentacles for those cash grants actually impact other tables as well. So that is a base for several other tables and also affects the SNAP grant as well, or the SNAP benefit. So it's these adjustments that we have to do all timely and consistently all at the same time impacting SNAP as well. So it's more than just a table change, but I certainly can appreciate why you think it might be more.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and Ms. Tibster. I know you're dealing with ancient computer systems, and but we did implement the $110 a month housing assistance grant. If we instead maybe change the eligibility for that or modify that, since we have an updated system for getting that out, would that be able to be implemented much more quickly?
Ms. Tibbetson. Chair, Representative. So I can't speak to what it would take to do that particular change. You are correct. This is an aging system. Today actually marks a unique anniversary for me. It's 30 years today that I was brought in to actually help create the MAXA system. So this is, you know, I'd like to think that I'm not old, but this, you know, there's some truth to that we're aging. As far as the 110, what if changing that eligibility would impact it, I would need to come back to you and see what that estimate would look like.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I mean, I just think we need to know what the technology options are, and sometimes I think we get kind of a price tag of doing the ultimate in reprogramming when actually we want some just practical problem solving. And so as someone who's worked on the system for 30 years, just think back. Mm-hmm. Is there a little lever somewhere that we could adjust to make things happen? Because it's really frustrating for us when families are facing increased cost of living in every aspect of their life, to not be able to make what seems like a really minor change in amount. And I'm not saying that you're wrong. I'm just saying to have to wait that long to make a difference. And if there's other routes that we could go that would be more efficient, I would be open to them.
Ms. Tibster.
Madam Chair and Representative, we would love to talk more with you about that. I mean, as far as, you know, we gave the best estimate that we could with the information we had at the time to have that dialogue and to come back with, there are other levers potentially that we could pull, different ways of putting together how to attack this. And because obviously we want to see this benefit get out, I mean, along with everyone else, as quickly as possible.
Thank you, Ms. Tibster. Representative Loeffler.
And thank you, Madam Chair. As you're looking at options, we heard in the testimony, you probably heard it too, that we're the only state that requires this monthly paperwork, which employs, you know, it's not just the recipient who has to fill that out. They have to send it in. It's got to get scanned. It's got to get reviewed, all those sorts of things. If there are ways for us to change that into a lesser demanding system, is that a way that we could free up some resources to put onto this, because it wouldn't have to enter in and correct things when people say, oh, I forgot to put last Saturday's schedule shift change in and whatever. I mean, in some ways, for people who have stable employment, we have to remember the majority of people at MFIP are working. You know, for many of them, they have a pretty stable job. Others who work in the restaurant industry and they say, oh my God, with the snow tonight, we don't need you. Sorry, we're cutting your hours. I understand where that's a harder situation, but at least for the people who have pretty steady employment, maybe we can drop off the review of those and put that energy into making this more possible for everyone.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Loeffler. And Ms. Tibster, I think you know, you're hearing it from Representative Loeffler. I think this committee has great interest in raising these grants. And because we've delayed for 30 years, we want you to hurry up and be able to help us do it. So, but really, so if you can, I think you could take that as a charge from the committee to really see if there's a way we can get this thing moving faster. Representative Noor.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I just wanted to say thank you to my former boss, Deb. This was, you know, happy 30th anniversary. I've been there with you and many of my colleagues at the state. I know we're addressing not only one program. We're addressing DWP, which is not included today, which I wanted to also mention that because it's also going to be impacted by this change. I'm hoping we'll get the bills ready for DWP and also for the GA. So multiple programs at the same time. Do you think the timeline that we have will be more sufficient, or do we need to be thinking how to stagger that process?
Ms. Titch. Madam Chair, Representative, the estimates that we did take into consideration the three bills. One of them did take into consideration raising the GA grant as well. That one of the timelines that we gave for that did take that into consideration. Additionally, the tentacles that I was referring to or I was intending to refer to as we changed that transitional grant for MFIB, the impacts to DWP and requiring that upgrade as well were included in the estimate.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And, yeah, and congratulations on your 30 years, and thank you for your service to the state. And, you know, one of the things, and I'd like DHS to come up, please, again, because we have questions. Thank you very much. I just wanted to comment in the meantime that, you know, the OLA, the Office of the Legislative Auditor, just put out a report on MNIT, and of course, we've all talked about MNLARS and that whole debacle. And one of the big messages is that before we try to program stuff, we need to simplify it. And this is probably absolutely one of those things. And when we had the hearing, the informational hearing on this program, I think we learned, our eyes are really opened, I know mine were, about how unnecessarily complicated it is. So I'm kind of hoping that DHS is working on and can give us some suggestions about how to streamline, because we are going to need to upgrade these systems that we have, and it's going to cost the state a lot of money. And boy, we better get it right and get the streamlining done first, and because we owe it to our taxpayers that you know, we simply are going to have to update our technology, and you know, we better do it all right this time. So, you know, the simplification's got to come, and that's what we have to do, a lot of that in this committee and in our HHS policy. So welcome back, and could you please give us your name again?
I'm Deborah Schlick. I work in the Economic Assistance Employment Supports Division of DHS.
Thank you very much, Ms. Schlick, right?
Yep.
Okay. Schlick. And Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, thanks for coming back, Ms. Schlick.
You're welcome.
Ms. Schlick.
Mm-hmm.
I'll keep practicing that. Anyway, you know, 33 years without an increase, and that's, you know, Republican governors, Democrat governors, Democrat legislatures, Republican legislatures.
Democratic.
It just seemed, what was the resistance? I mean, what has been the resistance? I mean, 33 years, all different types of administrations, and this is the first time they're looking at an increase. You don't look 33 years old, but I mean, maybe you can give us some insight on that.
Madam Chair and members, I don't think I really can. I think the observations of people involved at the different times proposals were made and failed would be useful to that. But I don't think I'm an expert in what the politics have been about that. The only piece of history I know that I can share with you is that the MFIP program was created by a bipartisan legislative working group when there was a major fight about what to do with the benefit levels. And so a bipartisan group was asked to come together, and out of that, the idea for the Minnesota Family Investment Program was created.
And Representative Grunhagen, well, go ahead. You finish. Ask another
Thank
question.
Thank you. And you know, just for the record, Chair Liebling and I voted against the Viking Stadium. Okay. We're closer than we think sometimes. But anyway, what if somebody loses their EBT Is there a number of times they can lose it and get a new one, or how does that process work?
Ms. Schlick.
Madam Chair and Representative Grunhagen, there is a process, but it's a process in which they cannot go directly back to the county and say, I lost my card. They have to. It has to be done through the mail. There has to be a check about that card's not being used. And I'm afraid, I don't know off the top of my head, there's a few steps. Like, you know, one loss is one thing, a couple of losses is another. But we could provide that information to the committee.
All right. Representative Grunhagen, thank you very much. And I just wanted to comment, too, to sort of my, you know, view of why. Because we can't really ask them why, because it's really we who haven't done it. We, the legislature, the political body. And I would say that when I started here in 2004, that this was kind of a politically, it was kind of the third rail of politics. You know, unfortunately, poor people have been used as a political football, and not just in this state, but, you know, probably nationally, certainly, and in other places as well, I bet. And, you know, there was the whole, when I think it was under the Clinton administration that there was the big welfare reform, and then the mythology has kind of continued about who it was and what this money was going for, and, you know, and I think it's just taken us years of, you know, you and I and legislators around these tables to really hear and understand who this is, how really difficult it is to live on this, and, you know, to get away from sort of the toxic political mythology of what we're talking about. So I think that's a lot of the reason, and I'm really gratified that there's such good bipartisan support and understanding, and that we and I don't know, maybe part of the change, granted, I'm sure that all of us still have constituents who do not understand this, who will say, why do you want to give more money to these undeserving people on welfare and so on, not understanding that this is children, that this is often people who are working very hard, that and how hard it is to live in poverty, and some of the things about what you have to go through if you make a mistake, I'm sitting here thinking, what if I had to do that? How hard would it be if I had to go back for the last week and account for what I was doing every hour or every day? I mean, it would be extremely difficult. That's a job in itself. So I think that we just have allowed the politics to take us away from the reality of who we're talking about and what we're talking about. And I just really so hope that we can get away from that, because these are our kids, and we now are in this situation. If it isn't about humanity, it should be also about economics, because we know that we're an aging society, we have fewer young people coming up, and we cannot afford to let any child be in a situation where they are getting less than they should to develop into their whole self, right? We owe it to our future to make sure that every single child is as prepared as we can make them, and that means helping them to get out of poverty. So, Representative Hamilton, please.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, for that. And going back to your comment on technology, you and I were elected the same year along with Loeffler and Representative Loeffler, and we've been talking about the need to upgrade these systems since then. You know, I go back to when my son went in to get his driver's license not too long ago. He tried to pay, I believe, with his phone app. They wouldn't accept that. With the debit card, they wouldn't accept that. And they said either cash or check. So then he texts me and says, Dad, I'm going to get my license plates next. Should I bring two chickens and a goat? I mean, what are they going to accept for payment, right? And so, anyway, we've been talking about, I guess my question is, and it's rhetorical, I know, back to myself as well, but is there an entity or a somebody working on bringing forth the proposal to the legislature on what the true need is so that we can address it accordingly? Do you know the answer to that question, Madam Chair, or anybody else, DHS or otherwise?
Well, Representative Hamilton, when you talk about the true need, I mean, there are different ways, of course, to measure that. And we do have, I think it's DEED that puts out this living wage calculation all the time. So is that the kind of thing you're thinking of?
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. I'm just talking about the technology for... Yeah, for all the departments, DHS and others, is there somebody working on that will bring back a proposal to us here at the legislature?
I think can you give us the answer to that? Please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I cannot give you an answer to that because I'm not part of the team that is working on it, but I can certainly go back to the office and get some information and provide you with that on the work we are doing, because obviously, like all of you, we are aware that our systems are aging and need to be updated.
And please give your name for the
record. I'm sorry, Jennifer Sommerfeld, CFS, Children and Family Services.
Okay, all right. All right. So we are at the end of our time, members. And Representative Loeffler, you're going to get the final word. And then
okay, well, Madam Chair, and Doug Berg shared with us how, you know, if we overestimate here, we might end up with risking some state dollars. But I would just say state and county dollars are at risk on every step of this, because you can't find housing in the metro area in most of greater Minnesota for under $500 a month. And so when we don't support families that go into homeless shelters that cost over $2,000 a month, the school evidence is clear that every time a child loses their home, goes into a shelter, they lose at least 6 months of progress. You can talk to any teacher about that. And we're being asked increasingly to fund food shelves, to fund all these support services, because we won't give people the dignity of having a budget that they can manage and meet the basic needs of them and their kids. So it has other implications for other parts of the budget as well.
Thank you very much, Representative Loeffler. Thank you, members. Thank you to all the testifiers. We really appreciate your coming to testify today. And with that, we are adjourned.